Jerusalem is a holy city for many millions of Christians, Muslims, as well as Jews. At the center of Jerusalem stands the second most holy site of Islam, the Dome of the Rock Mosque. The first is the holy city of Mecca, where the Prophet Muhammad is buried, a city to which millions of Muslims make an annual pilgrimage during the Hajj. For the past 2 years in Arab lands occupied by the Israelis, there has been a concerted drive to take away the land from its rightful owners, without compensation, and the occupation of the West Bank is being solidified by creeping methods, as more and more militant Jewish settlers take Arab property by force and without compensation for its rightful owners. The de facto leader of the movement to annex the West Bank rapidly and run the Arabs off is Ariel Sharon, a powerful figure with reputed links to the Frankfurt German Mafia and, until recently, Israeli Defense Minister. And may I remind you, ladies and gentlemen, that this was originally recorded and written in 1983. Sharon destabilized the Middle East with his invasion of Lebanon after he secretly received the go-ahead green light from Alexander Haig behind the back of President Reagan. Haig was Secretary of State at the time, and he is a former NATO official and a serving member of the New York Council on Foreign Relations. Haig is also a low-echelon messenger for the Club of Rome, headed by Aurelio Pecci. When copies of the illicit telex traffic between Haig and Sharon were given to President Reagan, he allowed Haig to resign instead of publicly firing him. At that meeting, the President also got information implicating Haig in activities on behalf of the British, which showed that Haig favored the planned attack on the Falklands Islands, the Malvinas, about which the President had been kept in the dark. Haig knew about Britain's plans to attack the Malvinas. President Reagan, like all of his predecessors, is a prisoner of the various secret societies who run Washington, including the Zionist lobby. He does not dare to do anything which might be upsetting to these secret societies. So, of course, he did not fire Haig, who at the very least should have been placed on trial for treason. The President could not very well punish Haig while allowing Sharon to cut a swathe of death and destruction through Lebanon. So Reagan demonstrated his impotence by failing to do the one thing which would have sent the Israeli army back to Israel. He refused to cut off military aid and money to Israel. Instead, the president of the world's most powerful country was reduced to pleading with Begin to save face and call his army back to Israel. Begin, of course, flatly refused. Ever since then, President Reagan has been wasting the time and money of the people of this country with useless diplomatic missions to Israel, missions which have succeeded only in making him look more and more impotent and weak. Because of his failure to act decisively against Sharon, Reagan is perceived by the Arabs as a leader who is unable to lead. Behind the scenes, just as it is with everything else involving United States foreign policy, is the black nobility and the British aristocracy. I have explained many times before that the British have controlled the course of events in the Middle East for centuries, acting through a number of Arab specialists like Sir John Glubb Pasha, T. E. Lawrence, Lawrence of Arabia, Lord Curzon, Lord Cromer, Wilfred Blount, Arnold Toynbee, and perhaps the greatest Arabist of them all, St. John Philby. It is the British who began the agitation inside Israel between the Sephardics and the Ashkenazim Jews, which is manifesting itself by acts of open hostility between the two strains of Jews. And let me say, in an update in 1990 when this is being re-recorded, that hostility between the Sephardics and the Ashkenazim Jews has grown until today. It is safe to say that a fairly wide gulf exists between these two strains of Jewry. The Sephardics have always been second-class citizens in Israel, and they are being taught how to develop a strong dislike for what they call, and I quote, the European Jews, unquote, meaning those Jews of Ashkenazim descent, who of course are not of Europe, but are also Eastern, being of Indo-Turk origin. Rioting erupted in Jerusalem on December the 27th, 1982. Between the two groups, the Sephardics painted slogans on the walls which read, "Send the Ashkenazim to Treblinka and Auschwitz," and "The Sephardic Revolution has begun." Swastikas were also painted on many buildings owned by Ashkenazim Jews. The Sephardics support Sharon, whom they view as the new king of Israel. Most of the cabinet members of the Israeli government are afraid of Sharon, so nothing has been done to discourage such sentiments. And the Sephardics hailed Sharon as a hero following his incursion into Lebanon. But Begin will never upgrade what he calls the colored Sephardics above their present level. But in this way he does pay attention. He makes periodic tribal calls and appeals for unity to them. High on the list of priorities of the Sephardics is the open and forced annexation of the West Bank. Now let me say that the Zionists are also exploiting this difference, and again I want to appeal to you to clearly understand that there is a difference between a Jew and a Zionist, a very big difference, and not all Jews are Zionists. Sharon has endeared himself to the cause and has suggested as a way to get rid of the Arabs that the testicles of every male Arab on the West Bank be torn off. The fact that the West Bank is being slowly but surely annexed is not enough for the Sephardics. They want it done immediately and with force used to drive off the Arabs. The Sephardic claim to the West Bank Arab land is being supported by over 40 million Christian fundamentalists led by Jerry Falwell. Now, I will use the word cultists in connection with the Christian fundamentalists. By that, I do not mean the rank and file membership. I'm talking about certain leaders who are definitely cultist in their beliefs and ideas. And I think that's a very dangerous thing for Christianity. And being a Christian, that is why I'm bringing this up. Israel has been able to keep a chokehold on the United States with the help of this group. They also believe that the Jews are the people of the Old Testament, the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Moses. Perpetuation of this misleading doctrine by fundamentalists is what keeps them on the TV screens and ensures that the Israeli government has a large pressure group which will always support it, no matter how it acts, as we saw in the case of Lebanon. It is a pressure group which can be counted upon to tell President Reagan not to stray too far off the pathway of support for Israel. Unfortunately for the Arabs, they have no such force in the United States which is available to them. The effective ambassador which Begin has in America is Jerry Falwell, backed up by Copeland, Van Impe, Backer, Robertson, and Billy Graham. There are others, but I don't want to name them all. It's not necessary. These are what I call the mullahs of America in the Christian religion, with a following of 40 million fundamentalists. They're being trained to lead America into a holy war. It's a serious statement to make, but that is what I firmly believe. In an alliance with Zionist extremists, and again, I want you to understand, I do not blame all the Jews. I speak of the Zionist extremists and the Christian extremists against Muslim fundamentalist cultists. The spark to ignite the conflagration is the conspiracy of the Dome of the Rock Mosque, hatched by the Temple Mount Foundation run by Terry Reisenhoover. Even the Kimchi brothers of Israeli intelligence do not pose as much of a threat to the Arab nations, and I might add to the United States, as does Reisenhoover's crazy schemes. The money which leaves this country each year for Israel should be a cause of concern to everyone in America and the Arab world, and those abroad who have a genuine interest in peace and stability for the Middle East. huge sums of money flow into the coffers of Zionism. I don't mind it going to the Israelis, but it goes to Zionism. And by Israelis, I mean the ordinary Jewish people. Take a note of the following figures, and it will become apparent that there is no other government in the world which would permit such financial depredations to go on, other than, of course, the United States government. According to a recent report by Don P. Levine, or Levin, in the British mouthpiece on Wall Street, the Wall Street Journal, Jewish charities raise huge amounts of money in the United States. Levin tells the story of one university professor who is accustomed to giving $10,000 per annum to Israel. Levin says fundraisers, and this is a quote, for Israel have become a way of life. He goes on to say that, and I quote, the United Jewish Appeal umbrella organization for a number of Jewish charitable projects domestically and abroad reported that last year, that's 1982, the UJA received pledges for $567 million, which is up from $542 million in 1981. These are quotations from this report, ladies and gentlemen. The UJA's annual budget is about one-third of the nationwide United Way, even though the Jewish population in this country amounts to less than 3% of the total population. The UJA raises more money each year than the American Cancer Society, the American Heart Association, the Muscular Dystrophy March of Dimes, and the National Easter Seal Society combined. Over $1 billion a year is collected from these sources for Zionism, not for the help of the Jews, but for Zionism. Now, we must add to the staggering sum of money, the mind-boggling sum of money given by we, the taxpayers, to Israel through our supine and spineless United States government every year. The amount for the current fiscal year was recently set at $2.5 billion. Add to this the efforts of the Israeli bond agents, which this year sold some 80 million worth of bonds, and you get an idea of the magnitude of the problem of money flowing from this country into Zionist coffers. Then you can add the estimated $70 million which Reverend Falwell collects from his flock, and which also goes to the Zionists. I wonder just how much the Reverend Falwell has sent to Lebanese Christians to relieve the misery and suffering inflicted upon them by the rampaging, out-of-control Israeli military machine under the direction of the butcher of Lebanon, Ariel Sharon. Yet we, the majority of the mainstream Christians, are actually to blame for this state of affairs because we allow it to continue year after year without a whimper or a smidgen of protest. Mr. Levin, or Levin, continues with his explanation of why the Zionists are so successful in feeding the insatiable appetite of the cuckoo fledgling deposited in our nest here in America. I'll quote him. Underlying altruism rooted in religion, which, by the way, does not extend to any other religion, community leaders and fundraiser professionals are deep-seated emotions, a pride in Israel. It is a pity that such deep-seated altruistic emotion does not extend to the victims of the U.S. equipped and supplied Israeli Air Force. The Israeli Air Force bombarded Tyre, Beirut, and Sidon without mercy, in a manner not seen since the Tavistock war criminal Winston Churchill ordered the destruction of Dresden. The senseless, savage, barbaric exercise of air power took the lives of thousands of Lebanese and wrecked property, including hospitals and schools, with damage running into the billions of dollars. Where is the Reverend Falwell when it comes to this side of the coin? Is he preaching out in condemnation of the Zionists? No, he is actually exhorting his fundamental people to support the barbaric actions of the Zionists. When Americans and even Jewish people began to protest, Mr. Begin did not turn to the Kimchi brothers or to Moshe Ahrens. No, he phoned the Reverend Jerry Falwell and got him to tell the White House to back off. Falwell did more than that. He actually approved of the Zionist activities in Lebanon and told his flock to do the same thing. According to the reliable magazine Action, 19,085 civilians lost their lives in Lebanon, yet Falwell and the 80,000 fundamental preachers raised no word of protest. This is all in accordance with the word of God, according to them. The figure I have given does not include the Palestinian refugees slaughtered in the Shatila refugee camp outside of Beirut. No doubt, the Reverend Falwell places such barbarity in the realm of God's will. I would like to ask the Reverend Falwell how much money he has collected for the Christian Palestinians who lost fathers and providers in the horror of Shatila. Perhaps he doesn't consider them as Christians, since they do not belong to his fundamentalist cult. On November the 11th, 1982, more than 400 Christian fundamental cult preachers gathered at Silver Springs, Maryland Synagogue. The Jewish Week, that's a paper from Washington, reported that, and I quote, "Enthusiastic applause greeted Dr. John Valford and Pastor Randy Sager's call to support Israel. Pastor Sager emphasized Israel's right to the land of Palestine." The Jewish Week reported that part of the two-day event was a joint worship of Jews and Christians at the Washington Heights Hebrew congregation. End of quote. If you did not realize that the Christian fundamentalist churches have become thoroughly Judaized, this report should convince you of the truth of that statement. The theme of the worship was that evangelicals, that is to say the fundamentalist cult, have been finding a lot of common ground with the Jews. The Christians invited Prime Minister Begin to address an evangelical meeting of the First Baptist Church in Dallas, an appointment Begin was not able to keep owing to the death of his wife. The Silver Springs gathering drew participants from Texas and California. One of the speakers was Azaria Rappaport, billed as an advisor to the Israeli embassy in Washington. Rappaport urged the fundamental cultists to go back and counter the lies being spread about Israel, and he was talking about the atrocities committed in Lebanon, while also to spread the word of the Lord of Zion. The conference issued a declaration stating, "Fundamental evangelicals are committed to the security of Israel. They oppose anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism and see the establishment of Israel as an undeniable fulfillment of biblical prophecy." To which I would add, how very convenient for the Zionist government of Israel that a godless government, an atheist government, can have the unqualified support of millions of Christians. What a marvelous windfall for them. A truly astonishing declaration was made by the Reverend Adrian Rogers, past president of the 14 million Southern Baptist Conference, and he said, "I love the nation of Israel." This confession of love for Israel was made at a meeting of 12 evangelical leaders and 12 rabbis held at the Embassy of Israel in Washington, D.C. It was billed as, quote, "a dialogue and the first meeting of its kind" by the Rabbinical Council of America. But it was not to discuss the newfound common ground. It discussed how best to put pressure on the White House for the Christian fundamentalist cult Edward McAteer of the Religious Roundtable, which indeed gives a very suspicious sounding title to this body, which is a Heritage Foundation front funded for the Club of Rome and a Fabian stronghold. John Kumuta of the National Religious Broadcasters and the Reverend Adrian Rogers of Memphis bent over backwards to express loyalty to the Zionist cause. Now, I must remind you, ladies and gentlemen, Zionism is a godless atheist organization. So how these Christians could support Zionism and still remain Christians is quite beyond my understanding. Rogers said, and I quote, "Some of the misconceptions we have inflicted toward the Jews and the Jews towards Christians will now be erased." Speaking in Congress, Senator Rudy Boschwitz, a leading Zionist spokesman, said that defending Israel was a real bargain in terms of the money it cost. "We always thought a bargain was supposed to have something in it for both parties." What is at the heart of this sudden coming together, this finding common ground between Zionists and Christian fundamentalists? First, let me remind you that some time back I did a special report which discussed the agenda of the Interreligious Peace Colloquium at Bellagio, Italy in 1975 under the auspices of Philip Klutznik, Sol Linowitz and Cyrus Vance. For those of you who have not seen that report, and by the way, it is still available, the conference was ordered to devise ways and means of using fundamentalists to destabilize targeted countries, more especially the Middle East countries. Iran was the outcome of the Bellagio conference, and what we are witnessing today between Zionist fanatics and Christian fundamentalists is also an outgrowth of policies laid down at Bellagio. Of course, the fundamentalists will deny this, but I believe that what I'm saying is absolutely provable and is certainly absolutely true. What the newfound alliance will do, or what it is expected to do, is support the crazy Temple Mount takeover by the Zionist extremists. Under the direction of millionaire Terry Reisenhuber of California, every effort is being made to extract $100 million from Christians to finance the building of Solomon's Temple on the present site of Islam's second holiest place, the Dome of the Rock, Al-Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem. Allied with Reisenhuber are the Christian fundamentalists. Tied in with this is the British plan to destabilize the Saudi royal family through another oil price shock. And I might say what is going on now in 1990, ladies and gentlemen, is confirmation of what I said in 1983. The Saudi royal family is being stabilized, but they do not realize it. Rank-and-file fundamentalists, Christians and Muslims alike, do not realize that they are the dupes of international forces which care very little, if anything, about their religious beliefs. They do not realize that they are being set up to bring about a Khomeini-style revolution in Saudi Arabia, Morocco, Egypt, Algeria, and that the catalyst to precipitate these revolutions, which could very well lead to the Third World War, is the Dome of the Rock conspiracy hatched by the Temple Mount foundations. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I don't want to toot my horn, but let me say this was written in 1983, and what I said in 1983 is being absolutely borne out to the letter today in 1990. In Israel, Interior Minister Joseph Berg is strongly opposed to what the Israeli press calls the Temple Mount crazies, unquote. That is, these are not my words. These are words from the Orthodox Jewish press. Berg is opposed, utterly opposed, to becoming a part of the official policy of the Temple Mount as the policy of the Israeli government, for which he is much hated by the Jewish fundamentalist groups. Berg's son was intended as a target for a grenade thrown on a crowd of Peace Now demonstrators who were demanding the resignation of Sharon following the Shatila massacre. I want you to understand that there is strong opposition within Israel itself by Jewish people to what is going on here. They realize, although our Christian fundamentalists apparently do not, they realize that they are being manipulated, and they are angry about this. Berg's son was wounded in the attack, and another man was killed. This was said to be the work of Meir Kahan's Koch party, of the Jewish Defense League. Its leader, Rabbi Kahan, flew to New York following the issue of an arrest warrant for his part in the grenade attack. He was not detained by U.S. immigration officials on arrival in New York and walked around New York without any attempt being made by the New York District Attorney to arrest him on the Israeli warrant. Of course, as an update, in 1990, we know that Mr. Kahani was assassinated a few weeks ago. In Israel, as I mentioned, several newspapers have picked up on the Dome of the Rock story, which I first disclosed in November of 1982. As far as I am aware, no national paper has yet printed the full story, and that remained true, ladies and gentlemen, right up to almost 1985, before anyone else came out with a story. Reisenhuber says that he is Nehemiah reincarnated, and says he made this discovery some 12 years ago. Since then, says Reisenhuber, he has devoted his life to the cause of rebuilding Solomon's Temple in Jerusalem. He says this is strictly in accordance with the Christian Bible, which of course it is not. The Christian fundamentalists are showing the same kind of blinkered reaction as Muslim fundamentalists have shown in Iran. I have long warned that Christians would be used as a destabilizing force, for which I was severely criticized by some of the fundamentalists who do not understand the whole broad picture and cannot see the whole broad canvas. The Israeli press reported on the Greater Israel Jewish Fundamentalists and its connection with Sharon. It has confirmed what I said last November, that the plan to annex the land upon which the Dome of the Rock Mosque stands is no good. Unfavorable press coverage was given by the newspaper Kol Ha'ir Ma'ariv and Davar Yediot, while in the U.S., the Yiddish language journal, Al-Khamenei Journal, also picked up on the story. Although none of them said anything about the complicity of Haig and Kissinger in the plot, in fact, the Jerusalem Post denied it, there is strong suspicion that these people are indeed involved. Reisenhuber has close ties to the Begin government through Chaim Druckmann and the nuclear physicist Yuval Neiman. The fundamentalist movement was exported to America from England following the Bellagio conference. Queen Elizabeth was involved in this plot against Christianity. The whole project is being run by British intelligence, just as it ran the Iran mullahs. Tavistock Institute is closely involved through Stanford Research Center, which has persuaded Christian fundamentalists to fall for its zero growth ideas for United States industry. The United States steel and auto and housing industries have been shut down by the same people who planned the destruction of Iran's industries and nuclear power stations, using Muslim fundamentalists to do the job for them, which they are now doing to America's industrial base using Christians, fanatics, and deceiving them in such a manner that they follow the instructions of Aspen Institute without even realizing what they are doing. As a result of these ideas formulated by Aspen and executed by Muslim fundamentalists, Iran is in the dark ages. Fundamentalist cult preachers are telling their flocks that the apocalypse is at hand. Gog and Magog will soon launch their assault on Israel, and at that point all of the Jews will be converted to Christianity. And do you know that millions of fundamentalist Christians actually believe this story? Doesn't that place them on the same level as the peasants of Iran, who were totally misled by the mullahs? I believe that it does. There are some who have doubt that Begin would have anything to do with Christian fundamentalism. Let those doubters doubt as much as they want. Isn't his longtime friendship with Jerry Falwell sufficient proof thereof? Of course. It is true that Begin appears to be cooperating with the Christian fundamentalists, but it is for strategic short-term gains, in exactly the same way that he is cooperating with Khomeini against Iraq. And, surprisingly, while Sharon is cooperating with certain radical elements of the PLO. At this point, ladies and gentlemen, would you please turn your tape over for a continuation of the program? The Christians are just as wrong as Khomeini was. Khomeini kills and murders while doing it in the name of the Muslim fundamentalist movement. Yet Khomeini is not a true Muslim. In fact, he is against many of the teachings of the Prophet Muhammad. I would like to touch very briefly on the similarity between conditions in Israel today and those just prior to the Six-Day War in 1967. In 1967, when KGB leader Andropov worked with Eshkol and Dayan to upset Nasser and dump him, the British worked on the Arabs, doing all they could to provoke them into acts which would give the Israelis reasons to retaliate. Both the British and the KGB worked through Kim Philby, son of St. John Philby, perhaps the greatest of all Arabists. Just as today the Soviets shared Philby with British rulers, and the famous Six-Day War, won by Dayan, was the outcome of a joint British-Soviet enterprise backed by the Israeli government. With this information in hand, we can understand just how important the Dome of the Rock is in the conspiracy to destabilize the Middle East. Any provocation by the new Christian fundamentalist Zionist alliance will bring instant retaliation from the whole worldwide Islamic community. The Arabs are saying that the United States failed to act like a superpower because it could not contain Iran and Israel. The United States is completely discredited because not only can it not get Begin out of Israel, it has demonstrated that it's unable to stop the creeping annexation of the West Bank and Gaza. As I said last November, Begin had already started to make contact with the Soviet Union through Shamir and Gromyko, who met at the United Nations. It is one of the reasons why the Israelis have defied President Reagan. When Reagan sent his well-publicized letter telling Begin to get the hell out of Beirut, it was simply ignored, and the Soviets let the fact be known all over the Arab states. Another factor which is causing a loss of faith for America is the British alliance with Andropov. As I disclosed sometime last year, Philby, although a general in the KGB, is shared by British and Soviet intelligence. The British are using the Soviets and the Israelis to destabilize the Middle East. The Prime spy scandal, that's Jeffrey Prime, is a case in point, and it has caused a serious rift in British-United States relations, which has still not yet healed. This is reflected in statements made by Francis Pim, Foreign Secretary, and the Soviet leaders, in which both criticize United States Middle East policy in strikingly similar terms. In fact, the magazine Middle East says openly that the British have staged an intelligence coup against the United States in the Middle East, and this is as true in 1983 and it is as true in 1990. According to Reuters, there are other signs that Israel and the Soviet Union are mending fences. Now, ladies and gentlemen, these words were written in 1983, and today, in 1990, in fulfillment of this prophecy of mine, the Soviet Union and the Israelis have indeed mended fences, and they are right back together again. On April the 1st, 1983, Begin said that he felt sure that restrictions on Jews who wish to emigrate would soon be lifted for religious reasons. And here again, these prophecies have certainly come to pass. Andropov has promised Israel and Sharon particularly a big slice of the new Yalta Agreement pie when the Middle East is carved up after the big battle is over. In 1983, there was no sign of any big battle. But of course, these words have proved prophetic, since in 1990 we are facing the biggest battle since World War II in that region. In Israel, the leader of the Jewish fundamentalist cult is an ex-Lehi leader, a leftover from the Stern Gang. He has built an elaborate base in Israel from which the assault on the Dome of the Rock Mosque can be launched. He is supported by Yuval Nieman and the Gush Emunim Party. These are radical extremists. But there are others in Israel who see the plot as a danger to Israel. And in an interview with a French newspaper, Le Nouvel Ouverture, Navon, the president of Israel, said that the activities of the Temple Mount group could bring on, quote, civil war, unquote, and that the possibility has increased since the death of a Peace Now demonstrator. The Israel Mapam party in parliament is seeking to ban Kahani's catch party, on which it blames the grenade attack on the Peace Now demonstrators. Much of these things, ladies and gentlemen, have come to pass since this was written in 1983. On March the 6th, 1983, the Jerusalem Post, which is part owned by United States Labour leader Lane Kirkland through family connections, confirmed what I said in November of 1982. And I quote, "Christian fundamental sects working together with Jews seek to rebuild the Temple of Solomon. It scorned the idea of Kissinger being involved. Stanley Goldfoot, Temple Mount Foundation's Israeli representative, was quoted by the paper as saying, the real Zionists in the United States are not the American Jews, but the Christian evangelicals, since these Christians feel that we are coming closer to a critical period in history, and they want the Jews to fulfill the prophecies and thus hasten the second coming of the Messiah. The evangelicals affect 20 million people a day in America. They are a great asset and must be used as such. I trust that some of you who might be Christian fundamentalists will not be too angry about what I've said, but I believe I must speak the truth. And here is the truth about the way in which Christian fundamentalists have been, are being, and will be misused by godless Zionists to bring about the destruction of the event of the Dome of the Rock Mosque and set the stage for a massive Third World War. To those of you with any intelligence training, the whole scheme smacks of the handiwork of British intelligence. It is a typical Tavistock plan. In fact, it is a carbon copy of the successful operation which toppled the Shah of Iran. Stanley Goldfoot actually confirms this, although he does so inadvertently. Goldfoot said, and I quote, Reisenhower is in the oil business and believes there is enough oil in the U.S. to dispense with Arab oil, which would then, of course, pass to the control of Israel and the British. These words are so prophetic that I must repeat again that they were written in 1983, and what I said then is about to be confirmed by events in 1990. The most remarkable of the American evangelicals is Lambert Dolphin, a senior science and archaeologist professor at the Stanford Research Institute. The paper also mentions a certain tax-exempt foundation run out of Santa Ana by the Reverend Ray Stedman and Chuck Smith, as working very closely with the Temple Mount Foundation. Of course, none of this important information is disclosed in what passes for the nightly news on TV. Not even the March 10th arrest of 40 armed men belonging to the JDL, who were seized as they tried to tunnel into the Dome of the Rock Mosque, which was not reported, not even when Kahane fled to New York. The Jerusalem Post stated on March 13th that this was an act of terror by religious national fanatics which could have resulted in international disaster. The very idea of trying to take over the Temple Mount in the heart of Jerusalem on the eve of Friday's Muslim prayers is so crazy and objectionable that it defies understanding. These, ladies and gentlemen, are the words of the Jerusalem Post. They are not my words, but I heartily endorse what the Jerusalem Post had to say. And I hope those of you who are Christian fundamentalists will ponder on these words and not continue to be misled by your preachers and by the Zionists who are behind it all. The Jerusalem Post calls the followers of Stanley Goldfoot and I'll quote what they said, "Itinerant terrorists with full and free access to all sorts of weapons and military equipment, apparently without any control." And we need to ponder on these words. It is such self-styled settler followers of Rabbi Noah who have been shooting up the West Bank Arabs. 7 Palestinians were wounded at the Beit Shira village near Ramallah. They were trying to protect their homes against a group of settlers who had arrived on bulldozers to make a road through the middle of their village. It is to such acts of terror which the Jerusalem Post was referring, and it is the kind of action which the American fundamentalist Christians are defending, albeit inadvertently in many cases. You good people don't know what's happening. You're looking at this merely from a religious aspect. We probably think that the March 13th call by Yuval Nirman, the father of the Israeli nuclear bomb project, who called on the Israeli government to pass a law allowing Jews to pray on the Temple Mount. Now, this is against the Jewish religion itself, because the rabbinical law says that Jews are not allowed to pray up there. And this is the type of provocation which the British intelligence service is so good at engineering, and which they engineered many times over before the Six-Day War. And then, as now, British Freemasonry is directing Nieman, who also called upon the government of Israel to embark on a massive settlements policy on the West Bank and other Arab lands. And now you see that in 1990 these things have all come to pass. Nieman is the main backer of the Jewish fundamentalist movement involving the Dome of the Rock Mosque conspiracy in Israel. But as I said, he is a Masada Lodge member of British Freemason activity, which is typified by the highly secret visit on March the 16th to the 25th, 1983, of Michael, Duke of Kent, cousin to Queen Elizabeth and head of the Scottish Rite Freemason Lodges. Now you know that you haven't heard a peep about his visit to Saudi Arabia from either press or television sources. Why the secrecy? When Prince Charles travels anywhere, it is headline news. The spokesman at Buckingham Palace is also not talking, at least not as freely as he does when Prince Charles is on the move. But to get back to those directly involved in the day-to-day affairs of the Jewish Christian fundamentalist conspiracy against the Muslim holy place. A real extremist is Rabbi Gutz, and he's Moshe Aaron's right-hand man. Aaron's was the Israeli ambassador to Washington. Moshe Aaron's is a hardline Zionist who favors a complete annexation of the West Bank. He is alleged to have said that the Arabs should be threatened with a bomb unless they get out of the West Bank immediately. Aarons was careful to keep a low profile while he was his country's ambassador in Washington, but that did not convince those who knew his past. Aarons has always been a Zionist extremist. Ever since he joined BETAR, B-E-T-A-R, the youth brigade of the Irgun terrorist gang, whose ex-leader is the present Prime Minister of Israel, Mr. Begin. It was Aarons who taught Meir Kahan all the tricks of the trade, so now you know just what kind of a diplomat Moshe Aarons is. Yet Aarons was accepted by the Reagan administration without question about past activities. One wonders where Reagan gets the nerve from to call the Libyans terrorists while allowing people like Aaron's diplomatic status. I would like now to expand my comments on the role of British Freemasonry in the Temple Mount Foundation. Ever since I began my series of tapes and special reports last year, I've never failed to mention by name the British agents and institutions, both here in the United States and elsewhere, which were directly involved in the downfall of the Shah and the return of Iran to the Dark Ages. I would be amiss and very much wrong if I failed to continue in that line, even though it may earn me the animosity of people who I would like to be my friends and supporters. I've explained how the British, acting through such diverse organizations as the Arab Bureau and the Oxford Group, set out to neutralize the great teachings of the Prophet Muhammad, and how Freemasons established the Sufi and Baha'i movements, using particularly the Oxford Group to spread the Sufi gospel. I've explained how the Scottish Rite Freemason Lodge was involved in diverse projects in the USA, such as the MK Ultra LSD experiment, rock and roll music, introduced by the Schizophrenia Division of the Scottish Rite of North America. The same group is funding the Hinckley psychiatrist, Hinckley being the man who tried to murder President Ford. It is nearly impossible for me to repeat the information previously given in these reports. Yet, for the serious student of Middle East affairs, it is a must to have this information. One of the secret organizations backing the Temple Mount conspiracy is the Quatta Coronati Lodge in London. The head of the Quatta Coronati Lodge is the Reverend B. Cryer of the Church of England, and that was 1983, ladies and gentlemen. It has possibly changed by now. Recently, Cryer expressed a view that a war would break out if unrestricted access at all times for Muslims to the Dome of the Rock Mosque was in any way interfered with. And we know in 1990 that this is exactly what the Israeli government did. They forbade for a short period entry into the mosque by Muslim worshippers. The war over the Dome of the Rock Mosque will prove to be genocidal for Arabs and millions of Christians too. And also many, many Jews will perish. Moshe Aarons will probably get his chance to drop the H-bomb on a few Arab capitals. In the aftermath, the United States will have lost all credibility. But as far as the Arabs are concerned, it will no longer matter, since they will have ceased to exist as nation-states. Again, these words are very prophetic in the light of what is happening today in 1990, where the Israeli government is about to do exactly this, its target being the capital city of Baghdad in Iraq. Please do not doubt that the same organizations and the same people who were so successful in bringing down the Shah of Iran have declared their intention to restructure the Middle East, and they are determined to carry out their plan, no matter what the cost. The first country to be stabilized, to be destabilized, will be Saudi Arabia. As mentioned earlier, the Duke of Kent paid a secret visit to Saudi Arabia on March the 16th through the 25th, 1983. Could his visit have had anything to do with the determination of Britain to undermine United States influence with its staunch ally? Of course, his London spokesman at the palace, Commander Buckley, would never tell us anything, even if we could get to him to ask these questions. The Queen herself is interested in the Dome of the Rock conspiracy, so the matter would never be discussed with mere, quote, commoners, unquote. The magazine Petroleum Economist is the mouthpiece for the very noble Angus Ogilvy, who is married to the Duke of Kent's sister. Petroleum Economist said in a recent article that a second oil shock is on the way, and it implied that the last shock was a test for the survival of Saudi Arabia, and that this one will be a more severe test as BP sells Iranian oil at below $20 per barrel, as I disclosed several months ago before the OPEC meeting in Geneva. Again, I would point out to you the prophetic nature of these words. It was British Petroleum using Kuwait that sold Iraqi oil at $10 a barrel in an attempt to destabilize the economy of Iraq. Movies like His Land, put out by the Billy Graham Group and seen by 20 million Christian fundamentalists, does not help the situation at all. The movie is a joint venture of Graham and extremist Zionists and the American Jewish Committee. The theme of the movie is that the Zionists have a clear title to the land of the Middle East. It ignores the legitimate claims of the Arabs and Palestinians. The Graham-led fundamentalists claim that the 1948 establishment of the State of Israel is the single most important event of the 20th century is not true. Graham blithely ignores the fact that thousands of Palestinians are mainstream Christians with a history in Palestine which dates back for more than 2,000 years. The Zionists have long ago recognized that Christian fundamental cultists are a valuable asset. As World Zionist member Jacques Torsinia said, and I quote, "We have first of all come to the conclusion that the right-wing Christian fundamentalists reactionaries. Note they call you reactionaries. I call your leaders cultists, but he calls them reactionaries, are the natural allies of Zionism. End of quote. Dr. Falwell was presented with a Jabotinsky Award at a sumptuous banquet in his honor by Dr. Samuel Cohen, who in a laudatory speech said, and I quote, "We are glad that you are such a staunch supporter of the State of Israel." I don't think Reverend Falwell knows who Jabotinsky was or anything about his history. If he did, he would never, as a Christian, have accepted such an award. Mainstream Christians must renounce these heresies. Mainstream Christianity does not subscribe to Falwell's views. It recognizes the legitimate rights of the Palestinians and deplores the Temple Mount Foundation conspiracy. Mainstream Christianity does not subscribe to Falwell's anti-Arab position. It recognizes it as a fanaticism and a form of cult worship which has no place in the teachings of Christ, any more than the Muslim Brotherhood has a place in the true teachings of the Prophet Muhammad. British Freemasonry is doing everything it can to provoke the extremist elements of Muslim fundamentalists to react strongly against the Zionist Christian fundamentalist conspiracy aimed at the Dome of the Rock Mosque. If anything happens to abrogate the rights of Muslims in Jerusalem, it may well be the spark which will start the planned conflagration. It is the bounden duty of mainstream Christians and Muslims alike to foil the conspiracy and prevent the whole Middle East from falling victim to religious fanaticism. From the Christian side, we need to examine very closely what kind of a role Bishop Paul Moore and Rabbi Mark Davis are playing. We know that it was their doing which got the Jim Jones cult going, and we also know that Bishop Moore is a defender of the FALN terrorist movement. We know that Paul Moore is an Episcopalian, head of the Church of St. John the Divine in New York, and we should bear in mind that the Queen, through the Archbishop of Canterbury, is the nominal head of the Church of England in America. The connection is that the Queen, through her theologian, Herbert Wadhams, agreed to export fundamentalism's new directions to the U.S., and unfortunately, leaders like Falwell and Billy Graham have fallen for this hook, line, and sinker, and all. The British have a hold on Middle Eastern affairs through the Palestine Exploration Fund and the British Foreign Bible Society. On the Israeli side, they have the Masada Lodge, a Freemason lodge, which is connected to Yuval Neiman. In the USA, what I call the Armageddon Apocalypse Group is working very hard to persuade Christian fundamentalists that the hour is at hand through Hal Lindsey's work, the Religious Round Table. Now that name alone is enough to make the hackles on my head rise, and a host of fundamentalist preachers who are saying that the final battle of Armageddon is due to begin any day now, and that it will be fought out over Jerusalem, just like the Old Testament says. It will, they say, be the Zionists and the Christians on one hand against the communists and the Arabs on the other hand. According to these lunatics, it will happen in 1984, because 1984 is designated in Hebrew on the calendar as the year of Shemad, which means destroy. Of course, as we now know, their predictions are somewhat off. On the Muslim side, there is Sufism. As I explained in an earlier report, Sufism was set up by British Freemasonry and Arabist specialist groups like the Oxford Group as a counterforce to the true teachings of the Prophet Muhammad. The Prophet Muhammad did his best to drive out superstition and backwardness. He tried to teach the Arabs that it is their right to make progress and become an enlightened nation. He taught millions of Arabs to read and write their language, which is all the more remarkable when we consider that Arabic was not yet a written language when Muhammad commenced his task. In Iran, the Sufis found a martyr in Ali Shariati, a Sufi mystic who was responsible for getting the Iranian students fully involved in Khomeini's revolution. In late February of 1982, Aurelio Pecci attended a meeting in Salzburg, Austria, and during his speech, he said that the Club of Rome has plans to unleash a new fundamentalist religious cult movement under the guise of a peace movement, which he believed would be very effective. This has permeated the ranks of the Christian fundamentalists in America, even though the rank and file are totally unaware of these happenings. What is important for the Arabs is that they realize that their nationalism is at stake. Unless Arab nationalism is defended, it will be overwhelmed by fundamentalist crazies in the same way that American ideals of fair play and justice are being overwhelmed by other cult movements, including, I'm sorry to say, certain parts of the Christian fundamentalist cult movement. Behind both these forces stands the real force bent on bringing about radical changes in the Middle East. What went on at the April conference of Georgetown University Center for Contemporary Studies? Did the conference express support for the Arabs? No, in fact, it did exactly the opposite. In fact, it said that we, the British Arabists, the Sufi Muslims, and the Muslim Brotherhood, know what is good for the future of the Middle East. We know that fundamentalism is more important than the royal family or King Hussein of Morocco. We know that Islamic fundamentalism is more important than the existing nation-state boundaries, including those of King Hussein and those of Iraq. The same force which took over the Al-Haram Mosque in Mecca is working today to take over the Temple Mount conspiracy and burn down and destroy the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And they are backed by the very same people who place Khomeini in power. It is no accident that Mansour Farag is at Princeton, where Richard Falk is. It was Richard Falk, along with Bernard Lewis, who brought down the Shah. And Farag is more than the Iranian ambassador to the United Nations. If the Islamic Christians and Zionist fanatics succeed in fomenting war over the Dome of the Rock Mosque, it will engulf all of Islam in a war of genocide. The United States embassies throughout the area will be first to be attacked, and by comparison with the embassy takeover in Tehran by Dr. Forer's students, that will be an affair to be remembered. The Muslims will do it because they see the United States as the principal ally of Zionism. We are on the brink of a religiously inspired war, the likes of which the world has never seen before. And when it is all over, there will be no more Arab nation states. Again, I remind you, these words were written in 1983, and as we stand on the brink of war in 1990, I think this prophecy I made in 1983 is on the point of being fulfilled. Sharon will get his share of the new Yalta pie. American influence will be finished, and the entire region will be back in the dark ages. The work of both Christ and Muhammad will have suffered a severe reversal. In their place will be such teachings as are found in Khomeini's Green Book. Responsibility for the war, when it comes, will rest with mainstream Christians and Muslims alike, for we have stood by and let the small percentage of fanatical cultists on both sides call the shots. We will have let the Billy Grahams and the Jerry Falwells, the Sufis and the Muslim Brotherhood succeed. We, the majority, must tell the rest of our people that we do not share in the convictions of Christian fundamentalist cults and Muslim fanatics of the Khomeini kind. We have an example of what can happen. We saw it happen in Iran. Our responsibility is to see to it that the false Armageddon, which the Temple Mount Foundation is trying to bring on, is nipped in the bud before it can begin. If Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Morocco, and the Gulf states are not yet aware of the subversive nature of the Club of Rome, and if they are not yet aware of the nature of the work being carried out at the Tavistock Institute and Stanford Research Center, the RAND Corporation, the Hudson Institute, and the Esalen Institute, then we must find ways to let them know. And again, I say that this was written in 1983. In 1990, we see that these states have all been taken in by a massive fraudulent effort inspired by the Tavistock Institute and British Freemasonry, and gladly put forward by President George Bush. This message will be continued in part 2 of this tape. Thank you for listening.